Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. In the Persian Gulf this morning, a French warship radioed an American vessel that it had spotted three mines in waters off Qatar. Shipping is being warned to avoid that area. President Reagan spoke about the Gulf a few moments ago at the White House.
It seems to be quieting down. We hope it continues that way.
At this hour yesterday, U.S. and Iranian forces were battling in the Persian Gulf. Correspondent Mark Phillips reports on the situation this morning.
The U.S. Navy was much in evidence in the Gulf today, but in contrast to yesterday, has not so far been involved in any action. The Iranians, on the other hand, still appear to be reacting to yesterday's American attacks. Iranian gunboats this morning fired on a small tanker in the Straits of Hormuz at the entrance to the Gulf. The tanker was set ablaze and the crew abandoned ship. More details have emerged today on the American action yesterday. During one of the attacks, the Iranians fought back by firing Chinese-made silkworm missiles at American ships. It's the first time those missiles have been used against U.S. warships. Each time, the U.S. vessels took avoiding action and fired chaff into the air to deflect the radar-guided missiles. Shooting back, the American warships sank or damaged an Iranian patrol boat, two missile frigates, and a number of small armed speedboats. For their part, the Iranians claim to have shot down a U.S. helicopter. The Navy acknowledges one of its helicopters is missing and is still searching for it and its two-man crew. Mark Phillips, CBS News in the Gulf.
The Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda today denounced yesterday's U.S. raids on Iranian oil platforms as banditry aimed at preserving Western influence in the Gulf. Pravda also criticized what it called Iranian pirate activities. There's some action this morning in the Kuwait Airways hijacking, now in its third week. CBS News correspondent Bill McLaughlin reports from the Algiers airport.
There is movement here at Algiers airport, although at the moment no one really knows what it all means. The terrorists say they want to issue a statement to the press and are expected to do so very soon. Meanwhile, several police vans have moved out near the plane, and an executive jet belonging to the Algerian president's fleet just landed here. Earlier today, Kuwait's leading newspaper, Al Kabas, quotes unnamed sources to predict that the hijack will end peacefully within 24 hours. More concretely, an Algerian official met with the terrorists earlier this afternoon, then sped to a communications van used to relay important messages to the Algerian president. The waiting goes on, but this time, the waiting may be adding up to something. Bill McLaughlin, CBS News at Algiers Airport.
A court in Dusseldorf, West Germany, has handed a 13-year prison sentence to a Lebanese whose brother is wanted for trial in the United States in the 1985 TWA hijacking. Tony Catterall reports.
Abbas Hamari was charged with complicity in kidnapping two West Germans in Beirut, January 1987, coercing the Bonn government and smuggling explosives into West Germany. The presiding judge said the court found it proven he was one of the radical Shiite Muslims who kidnapped the two Germans. That was a successful attempt to stop Bonn from extraditing his younger brother, Mohammed, to Washington. Mohammed was arrested early January 1987, flying into Frankfurt Airport with liquid explosives in his baggage. When his real identity was established, Washington requested his extradition on murder and air piracy charges. Mohammed's alleged to be one of the two who hijacked the TWA airliner in 1985 and murdered a young U.S. Navy diver. During the trial of Abbas, the government admitted it had given in to the kidnapper's demands and decided to try Mohammed here. But the 13-year sentence for Abbas, only slightly under what the prosecution demanded, is seen as a sign that German justice can be tough. And it's a signal to the kidnappers, the one remaining German hostage won't be swapped for either Hamadi brother. Tony Catterall for CBS News, Dusseldorf.
About a million New York Democrats are expected to cast ballots today, deciding what has turned into a candidate street brawl with nasty undercurrents of race and religion. At stake are 255 convention delegates and the possible emergence of a clear-cut front-runner if Michael Dukakis manages a convincing win. The latest CBS News poll, conducted Sunday and Monday, shows Dukakis 9 points ahead of Jesse Jackson, 32 points in front of Al Gore. But on the eve of the primary, nearly 1 in 10 likely voters was still undecided. Murray Edelman is deputy director of the CBS News Election and Survey Unit.
The big uncertainty in this election is going to be turnout. You have very polarized voting blocks, and the real question will be who brings out the vote.
This is Rob Armstrong in New York. The polls are open, and now it is up to the voters. The candidate spent yesterday making last-minute appeals for support, Michael Dukakis, crisscrossed the state. This was his appeal in Buffalo.
I think the people of America are ready for change. I know the people of New York are.
All the recent polls show Albert Gore in third place, but with an upswing in recent days. On the Phil Donahue Show, Gore said the polls frequently have been wrong this year.
During the last 48 hours, there has been a dramatic shift from the undecided category toward our campaign. I'm really very encouraged. I think something's going on in New York State. People are moving toward our campaign.
Much attention on the day before the voting involved an allegation by New York Mayor Edward Koch, a Gore supporter, who accused Jackson of lying. Some Jackson aides say the mayor has interjected racism. Jackson says New York has been the toughest state to date.
We have received more death threats in this campaign than all of the others combined because the climate has been one that is so divisive.
The analysts are saying a big win for Dukakis today could be pivotal. A win or very close second by Jackson or an upset by Gore would extend the horse race possibly right to the convention in Atlanta. Rob Armstrong, CBS News, New York.
Jackson forces already have reason to cheer today following last night's clear win in Delaware's Democratic caucuses. A transmission line failure at a northern Quebec hydroelectric substation plunged the entire province of more than 6 million people and parts of New Brunswick, Maine, and Vermont into darkness for more than 4 hours last night. Many homes were without heat in near freezing weather. Malcolm Bernard reports from News Radio Quebec.
The timing was especially bad. Quebecers are fanatics about hockey, and they had settled in front of their televisions to view the Montreal Canadiens on home ice against the Boston Bruins. The power failed, and the telephone lines immediately overloaded as frustrated fans sought the latest score. The power remained out for most of the night, returning as repairmen plugged one city block after another back into Hydro-Quebec's distribution network. The state-owned utility blames the breakdown on a snowstorm that snapped a high-voltage transmission line about 200 miles north of Maine. That rupture left about 7 million people in the dark. Authorities say everyone coped except for some looting in downtown shopping districts here. Malcolm Bernard for CBS News, Montreal.
Incidentally, Quebecers were pleased to learn this morning the Canadiens beat the Bruins 5-2. A tornado has roared through Madison County, Florida, just south of the Georgia line. At least 4 people killed, 8 hospitalized. Several homes and a church were destroyed along a 10-mile swath. The dollar is slightly higher overseas. The London gold price slipped this morning to $456.55 an ounce. That's down about $2.50 from yesterday. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Industrial Average is ahead nearly 10 points at 2018.07. Volume on the big board, 23 million shares. Time on the roundup, 10 minutes past 7.